Hello, this is Dr. Kent Holtorp with another episode of the Peptide Summit. And today, we have a wonderful guest. It's Bob Miller with Functional Genomics, and he's going to talk about functional genomics with Bob Miller. Makes sense. And thanks, Bob, for being on. He is one of my favorite people and been working with him for a little bit, and I've just been so impressed in his the way he's really kind of revolutionized genomics. Instead of just looking at, you know, genetic wise, he's looking at, you know, functional genomics, with the name very fitting, and really shows you how you can treat these things. And it's really allowed a number of things, tells you not only what to treat with, but what you don't need, or if you're using too much of stuff. Or we've had patients who, you know, crash with glutathione. I'm like, what the heck? And he shows you why. It's incredible. He's like a fortune teller. When you're done, he knows more about you than you do. So thanks so much for being on and taking the time. I know you're so busy. How many patients do you see a day?
Well, I usually see people 9 to 12 hours a day. So somebody new an hour, recheck half hour. So that can add up there pretty good. But as I tell people, I just get to visit with my friends all day and help them out. So it's just a lot of fun.
He's too nice. He's got to be a robot. He can't be human.
I'm real, yeah.
So he's a traditional naturopath, specialized in the field of genetic special nutrition. He's earned his traditional naturopathic degree from Trinity School of Natural Health and is board certified through ANMA. In 1993, he opened the Tree of Life practice and has served as traditional naturopath for 27 years. In the past several years, he has engaged exclusively with functional, nutritional, genetic variants, and related research, specializing in nutritional support for those with chronic Lyme disease, and really kind of everything, you know, chronic multi-system disease. And it's pretty amazing. I'll just ask him, I don't know, do you sleep? Well, I guess he knows exactly what's wrong with him, and he can take exactly what he needs. So great educator. And we've had him on in with the patient, and it's pretty amazing, and it just correlates so well. We are very excited to have incorporated it into our practice, and it was so many steps above, you know, other ones out there. I'm not trying to bash anyone, but it's just kind of like, okay, you got the snip, okay, you're gonna get Alzheimer's, and you know, and he'll tell you what to do. You can either, you know, formulate, you know, the different things will tell you what supplements you know, the patient needs, or he can formulate them for you. So it's really full service and very cost effective as well, which is nice. He's nationally, internationally a lecturer to educate healthcare practitioners about genetic variants and nutritional supplementation for achieving optimal health, and holds live webinars every Thursday, which I highly recommend. And how would they find that? Go to naturalimagenics.com.
Well, if they just go to our functional genomic nutrition website, and we'll put that up at the end, you can then see how to you know, get a free trial of the software, listen to the webinars, or subscribe, or just email one of our help people here, Yvonne or Chrissy, and they'll help you get on the webinars every Thursday or every Thursday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, it's all free, and he has a training program that, hey, the first part is free. If you want to continue, it's very extensive. It's a minimal fee. And he's really there to give back, and he loves what he does. So it's just refreshing. He's created an online certification course on genetic nutrition for healthcare professionals. He's had, it has over 900 healthcare professionals in the program. He's a research and growing genomic research field. In 2015, he founded and personally funded, which is huge, the Nutrigenic Research Institute to research relationship between genetic variants and presenting symptoms. His first research product on genetic variants in those with chronic Lyme disease was one of two winners for research by the ILADS, which, you know, they're pretty strict and pretty, you know, intense. Meeting in Helsinki, Finland. His phase two study of Lyme disease was presented at the American ILADS Conference in November 2016. Phase three was presented at the International Lyme Conference in Paris. So you got to go to some nice places. And his phase four study on mTOR and autophagy, which I think is really an upcoming thing as well, in Lyme disease was presented in Boston 2017. And phase five was presented in Warsaw, Poland. And there's a phase six, another winner in Chicago, Illinois, November 2018, showed increased variance in the heme pathway and mast cell genes, which obviously is getting tons of press, at least in the whole Lyme, you know, chronic illness group. Phase seven presented in Madrid, been all over, in June of 2019, showed genetic variants and gene related to the production and utilization of NAD, all huge topics right now. And he's come with a lot of new theories, or at least I haven't heard of, you know, NADH, NADPH steel, Fenton reaction, he talks a lot about. And a research project on autism and PANDAS is being developed. Hey, if I can help you out in any way with that, that's exciting stuff. He's created 88 nutritional supplements. He's a formulator for healthcare professionals. Products have been based on his genetic research, designed to support function, and that are impaired by genetic weakness. So it's so nice you can just pick out what this person is going to need. And I found is that, you know, you kind of gravitate towards what seems to help you. And when I look, like, flavonoids were a big part of my SNPs, and I'm like, I discovered flavonoids, I just feel better. Like, you don't know for sure, but so it's really interesting. He's a software creator, my gosh. And that's what I really like about his software. It makes it understandable, you know, all these SNPs, and so many companies will give you 10,000 SNPs and it's like, oh my gosh. And they are having new generations of that, and it organizes the genetic SNPs and really, you know, pattern recognition, which it can be daunting for the person starting, but he has a system that gets you going pretty quick. So he's memberships of National Association of Certified Natural Health Professionals and American Association of Nutritional Consultants and Board Certified Naturopath and certified with the accreditation board there. So again, Bob, thanks so much for being on. I'd say one of my favorite people, and I just love working with you and just kind of sit on the edge of my chair whenever you speak. And again, those webinars are wonderful, and, you know, going through the tests with patients, they are very happy. It's really an added bonus for the patient, and I think, you know, patients are looking for that now. You know, it's becoming kind of the standard, but everyone, you know, I think certainly Bob's ahead of the curve in all this, and, you know, developing the software to make it, you know. And I think, I remember when I was like writing research papers, I go to the medical library, try to find the journal, put it on the Xerox, and, you know, get it. Now it's information overload. And that's what I think of genetics. It's just, okay, here's a million SNPs. Like, okay, what do you do with it? But let's see. So with your software, you call, it's created functional genomic analysis. We often think genetics, like, you know, 23andMe, Ancestry, or professional geneticist to look at potential disease. Tell us about functional genomics. What's the difference?
Sure. Well, as everybody knows, you can get 23andMe or Ancestry, see where your ancestors came from. That's okay. Professional geneticists, they're trained on which genes might be related to a disease. Well, we're taking a completely different approach. And this goes back to the traditional naturopathic philosophy. It goes way back. And that is that inflammation is the root cause of most of our problems. So I'll never forget, me around 10 years ago, I saw there was an article that says science has made a major discovery on the root cause of disease, and that is inflammation. And I kind of had a chuckle that, the naturopaths were saying that about 100 years ago. So what we started looking at was, can we look at the genetics and find out if there's a predisposition to more inflammation, or if there's a predisposition to less than optimal antioxidants? So what we did is we started digging into the DNA, and I had no training on this at all. I just sort of dug into it, fell in love with it. So rather than looking at disease, as you said, there are reports out there that look at your risk for disease. We don't do that at all. We don't make any predictions if someone's going to get an illness, because we're looking at function. So what we do in the software, we look at many different patterns where something might go wrong, where they might make more inflammation. Or we look at patterns where they may not make enough antioxidants. Then you also have phase one and phase two detox. So we look at sulfation, glucuronidation. We look at how you're dealing with your fats. And the whole premise is, this is personalized for the individual. This is not the pill for the ill. This isn't like, what do you do for this disease? We don't even talk about that. We look at how might the person be making too many free radicals, not enough antioxidants, and then more importantly, how to compensate. As we all know that the genetic pattern that you have, you received when you were born. At the moment that sperm and the egg went together, boom, that's you. And we can get what are called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, or mutations they're called. And when we get those, the DNA may not be as effective in making an enzyme, so some processes may not be optimal. So what we're looking at is where there might be something less than optimal, and then how we can intervene and either provide what the body's not making or support the enzymatic function that the body comes back into balance. We're creating homeostasis. So you could see 10 people with the same condition, and you might have 10 different ways they got there. So in my opinion, this has to be care of the future, personalized, not the pill for the ill, personalized care for the individual. And we're hoping that we're pioneering that to some degree.
I think it's great. And it is a different approach than, hey, you have, EPO4 gene, you're gonna get Alzheimer's. Okay, I gotta go on the next patient, it's interesting how you put it together and it makes sense of their symptoms.
That happens a lot of times. I'm talking to people and I start saying, I don't suppose you have fill in the blank, and they have this surprised look. Okay, who are you talking to? How did you know this? Well, when you understand functional genomics, it tells the story. Good example, there's two neurotransmitters inside the body. One is called glutamate, one is called GABA. Glutamate makes you very intelligent, highly motivated, go-getter. GABA's the don't worry, relax, be happy. By actually looking at the genes that turn the glutamate into the GABA, or the genes that make more glutamate, you can get clues if this person is high in glutamate and might have a hard time converting. So many times with people with high glutamate, they'll be anxious, tags on clothing bother them, their mind races. But on the other hand, they might be extremely intelligent. They might be gifted or in the genius range, but they're dealing with anxiety. And you can see that by looking at the genome. Quite amazing how you can see the personality traits that might be there. Same with histamine. We look at if the person might be creating too much histamine, if they have difficulty in the pathways that clear the histamine. You can see if there's high histamine. Then you can see if they have some of those histamine properties in their mental outlook, or they get rashes quickly, or they get hives, or they have overreactions. So you can really look at someone's genome and get a good idea where their glutamate might be, their GABA, where their inflammatory levels might be. And that way you can give customized care. So if the glutamate's too high, we do things that either reduce the glutamate or support the glutamate to GABA conversion. Where if their histamine is too high, we look at why they might be producing too much of it, rather than just a histamine blocker. And then we look at the pathways that clear histamine. There's an enzyme called diamine oxidase that degrades histamine. There's an enzyme called histamine and methyltransferase. There's an MAOA gene. And then you can also have overproduction of histamine from mast cells or an upregulation of an enzyme called histidine decarboxylase. So if someone just has high histamine, now you have an option rather than a histamine blocker. You can look at, are they overproducing? Are they not clearing? How do we bring that into balance? So again, someone with high histamine, you could have 10 different protocols as to how they got there. For some people, it's overproduction. For other people, it's inability to clear. For others, it's a combination of both. So for the doctor who really wants to dig in, get to that root cause, I believe this is where we have to start looking. And just one other quick note, I think things are changing. One of the premises that we have is that many of the illnesses we're seeing today is related to environmental toxicity. You know, we're living in a world that, you know, when you and I were kids, the world has changed dramatically. You know, when I was a kid, our milk came in glass jars, not plastics. So we're inundated with plastics. When I was a kid, I played out in the woods and slopped around in the creek, and now it's on your computer, just being exposed to EMF. Glyphosate may be impacting us dramatically. I think we're going to look back someday and say, what were we thinking giving our animals growth hormones to get them fatter faster? That's having an impact on us. You know, we're seeing, you know, girls maturing faster, sperm rates dropping. We're seeing autoimmune disease among children. You know, when I was a kid, we used to call it adult onset diabetes. Now the kids are getting it. Inflammatory bowel disease is rising among children. Mental health issues are rising. And I believe what's happening, our detox capacity is totally overwhelmed by the onslaught. Mold is getting stronger. And I also think we're going to look back someday and say, what were we thinking putting transmitters in our ears to talk on our phones and be exposed to all that EMF? So cumulatively, it's taking a toll on us. And those who have genetic weakness are the proverbial canary in the mines. They're being hit the hardest. Same with autism. Autism used to be relatively rare. Now, what is it? 1 out of 43 or 1 out of 45, particularly the boys? And it's got to be environmental factors. And that's why I think we're going to get away from the pill for the ill, because a lot of our care of the future is going to have to be supporting the body's ability to detox all of the environmental toxins we're being exposed to. Something dramatic is happening.
Well, you know, I can't agree with you more. But standard medicine isn't set up to do that. They're pill for the ill, you know, and it's like you go to this specialist, and they just look at their little section. And yeah, you know, 20 years ago or growing up, no one was sick. Like every time at a cocktail party or a people over, it's like, hey, you know, my sister's sick or I'm sick, my parents are sick. And it's like this multifunction, the doctors can figure it out. And this autoimmune and chronic fatigue syndrome and chronic Lyme, and it's scary. And where are we going to be in, you know, 20 years from now? And it's interesting. So I was one of the high glutamate. And I didn't get the intelligence part, but I got the anxiety, don't sleep, and just like turn everything in. I'm always worrying. And it's interesting. So you picked that out. And I'm like, wait a minute. I was asking, hey, did someone tell them about me? ADD like crazy. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because you can show whether or not, like you said, they're making enough or making too much or not breaking it down. And so now, instead of shotgunning all these supplements, you can be very selective. So because I tell patients, I can give you 100 things that work, but you can't take them all. And this allows you to be more of a smart bomb and go after these genes.
Yeah, I just had somebody say that I'm like a sniper, that I know exactly where to go and put it. Because I see people, and I'm sure you see it as well, people come in with, you know, shopping bags full of supplements or medications. And one of the interesting things is, you know, what I do is, you know, recommend nutrition for people. But interestingly, I often say I think I help people the most by taking them off things. Because as we get more inflamed and we take supplements that turn processes on, many times it backfires. You know, many years ago, we learned about MTHFR, and it's a very important enzyme. It puts a methyl group on B12. It puts a methyl group on folate, and then there's another one that puts a methyl group on B12. So the MTRR puts a methyl group on B12, MTHFR puts a methyl group on folate. And it's very important to methylate. I mean, everything we've heard about it is absolutely true. So what people did is they get their testing done. They'd find out they have MTHFR, and it's like, oh my gosh, I've got MTHFR. I need methylfolate. And they take 3 to 5 milligrams of this. And, you know, they might feel well for 10, 15 days, and all of a sudden, what the heck is happening? They get more anxious. They get more inflamed. And they may not even tie it to that. So although we need methylfolate, we need to methylate, if something called NADPH is inadequate inside the body, or other processes are going on, that methylfolate can actually make you worse. So in the pyramid that I created, I put methylfolate at the top or last. Now, of course, the exception is a pregnant woman, somebody's got a massive homocysteine problem that has to be dealt with. But other than that, I believe we are way overdosing on methylfolate. Another thing that I think we're overdosing on is glutamine. We hear about the term leaky gut. So what do? Oh, well, glutamine is good for the gut. It helps build new cells. Absolutely true. But it does that by supporting mTOR, mammalian target of rapamycin, the growth of cells. And many people have that overactive. So then when they take the glutamine, they get more anxious and they get more inflamed. And the final one that we have to be careful with is many times people want to improve their blood flow or their muscles, so they'll take L-arginine. Well, if you've got difficulty with your NOS enzymes, or you don't have enough BH4, you just happen to make more superoxide free radical. So some poor guy thinks he's going to improve his erectile function or muscle strength, and he ends up making himself hurt because he took L-arginine. So it's not only the right things to take, it's also the things to avoid. You know, another problem we have is bone broth. Some people think that it's this wonderful food, and it is, but it's high in glutamate and histamine. And if you have a problem there, it'll make you worse. Yeah. So, and same with fermented foods. You know, there's groups that tout the benefits of fermented food. It's good for the gut. Absolutely true. But if you don't make enough of the dynamine oxidase enzyme, it backfires on you. So it's interesting. I often say I think I help people more by taking them off things than putting them on. Here's an interesting clinical pearl that we're working on. We all know the benefits of B6. I mean, it does lots of things. However, it works with the histidine decarboxylase enzyme to make histamine. And we're now looking at the enzymes that degrade B6. And if someone doesn't degrade their B6, and they take too much B6, they actually significantly increase their histamine levels and can make themselves worse. So, and then sometimes people take supplements, they take a couple of them, they don't look at the ingredients, and all of a sudden 3 or 4 bottles have methylfolate or B6 in it, and they're overdosing. So we have to be careful not to overdose as much as we do need to take the right things as well.
Yeah, and that was the mice SNPs where I was taking pretty high dose of B6 for mast cell because it's good for mast cell. And I had that exact same thing where I don't break it down. And so I'm making more, you know, histamine and, I'm making everything worse. So, yeah.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
Yeah. And I'm like, some's good, more is better, you know. And exactly. And with the MTHFR, I can totally see that. And I was kind of doing even the same thing. I got, you know, whatever, methylfolate. Oh, I got some, I'll take 10, you know, whatever, every once in a while. And now, how does that relate to depression?
Well, keep in mind that there's many ways we get to depression. But to keep in mind, to make serotonin, we need something called BH4, tetrahydroberoptin. And then that combines with your 5-HTP to make your serotonin. A lot can go wrong there. Your BH4 also plays a role in making nitric oxide. So if we have not enough NADPH, the NOS enzymes aren't working properly, rather than making nitric oxide, we make superoxide that makes peroxynitrite that further depresses your BH4, most common thing we see in depression. But of course, we don't have the protocol for depression because there's many ways to get there. That's just one that I think can get there. Or I'm tending to think that there also may be an inflammatory component where the brain's just shutting down a little bit in a self-protective mode. That has to be researched. But the most common I see is that inflammation dampens the precursor to serotonin.
Interesting. And so we'll treat ALS patients and, you know, they'll come in wheelchairs and they're out jogging and send them back to the neurologist. The neurologist goes, oh, must have been a misdiagnosis. But and so I was trying the riluzole, I pronounce it wrong all the time, but, you know, blocks glutamate. And I found it doesn't work for ALS, but I found it worked for depression and anxiety, which kind of makes sense, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you can, I'd like to talk a little bit about one of our most exciting discoveries, and that is what we call the NADPH steal. I'm very intrigued by the NOX enzyme, NADPH oxidase, and the enzyme NADPH. Just very briefly, the immune system we have is totally astonishing. I mean, I'm just amazed at the complexity of the body and how it works despite what we do to it. So when we're exposed to a pathogen of some sort, there's an enzyme called NADPH oxidase that says, there's somebody here that doesn't belong here. We got to get rid of this. So when we're faced with a bacteria or a virus, this enzyme will take some oxygen from iron, an electron from NADPH, and create a storm. It'll create superoxide, hydrogen peroxide, mast cells, histamine, to kill the pathogen. And if we didn't have that, well, we'd die of infection. It wouldn't work. But I believe what's happening, going back to what I said earlier, environmental toxins are overstimulating this NADPH oxidase enzyme. And we're making too many mast cells, too much superoxide. Now, what's interesting, there's a fascinating molecule called NADPH. I love NADPH. It is what takes your oxidized glutathione back to your reduced. It helps the HMOX enzyme break down heme. It helps you make nitric oxide and does many, many important things. Without it, we wouldn't recycle our antioxidants. But that NADPH is used by the NOX enzyme to make all this inflammation. So here's a molecule or an electron that recycles your antioxidants and is protective from free radicals. On the other hand, is used to make free radicals. I am just totally thrilled by that thing. And I think that's what's happening to us, that environmental factors are shifting that balance. So when we were faced with a pathogen, we wanted to stop antioxidants, create an inflammatory burst to kill the pathogen, then go back to homeostasis. I believe environmental factors are overstimulating that NOX enzyme, continuing to make inflammation and mast cells. You know, I'm sure when you started your practice, you didn't hear much about mast cells. Now doctors are hearing about it all the time. Those who have a genetic predisposition to the NOX enzyme being overactive or more sensitive to these environmental factors are the ones being impacted by this. That's why I call it the NADPH steal, where this very important NADPH is being used to make more inflammation than it should rather than recycle antioxidants. Now, additionally, we look in the software, there's genetic mutations where you may not make enough NADPH. So if you combine that with it, you've got a real problem. And what we generally find is that when people are really ill, they can't get answers to their questions. They're usually overproducing free radicals by Fenton reaction or NOS uncoupling or the excess glutamate or interleukin-6 being upregulated. And then something wrong, they're not making enough antioxidants or enough NADPH, or the NADPH is being used excessively in that NADPH steal. And then finally, we've coined the phrase, the home cycle, a term we came up with based upon a relative of mine that I admired. And it's where this inflammation then feeds the renin angiotensin system, creates more NADPH, and we just have one cycle of inflammation. And I believe that's what's happening to a lot of people, that the inflammation can't be stopped. They might get Lyme disease, and their doctor tells them, okay, your Lyme is over, but they're still sick as can be.
Yeah.
Or they get some other inflammatory condition that just keeps going. So I think the challenge we're seeing today is that environmental factors are upregulating the NOX enzyme, and primarily by overstimulation of interleukin-6. If anyone would like to listen to it, I did a 1 hour, 50-minute interview with Dr. Jill Carnahan. It's on her YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, subscribe to Dr. Jill Carnahan. And actually, I have like 5 or 6 videos there. But the one on interleukin-6, I think the doctors will really appreciate, because we look at all the environmental factors combined with genetic weakness that's leading to upregulation of interleukin-6. I'm seeing that in so many of the most ill people we do. And when we do consults,
I think that seems to be the key cytokine that just sets everything off. And just to backtrack a little bit, so, you know, you talk about NADPH. How does giving NAD affect NADPH? I guess as long as you can recycle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. And again, you know, that's gotten a lot of attention. Some very well-known people are talking about the benefits of NAD. And everything you've heard is true. It feeds the PARP enzyme, which repairs your DNA. It makes your NADH, which is at the top of your electron transport for energy. It makes your NADPH. It stimulates the sirtuins that are your, you know, longevity enzymes that balances mTOR and autophagy. So you tend to think, well, the more NAD I take, the better off I am. And I talk to a lot of folks who do NAD therapy, and I'll say, if for some people, is this the best thing they've ever done? It's like, yeah, that's great. And I say, for other people, was it a horrible experience? And it's like, yeah. So yeah. I think what's happening is that, and this is just Bob Miller hypothesis, okay. But I think what's happening when the NOX enzyme is upregulated and you start boosting NADPH, you've just given more fuel to the fire to make more inflammation. So what I've been recommending people do is first calm down NOX, find out what are the factors that are overstimulating NADPH oxidase, calm that down, then give NAD and watch what happens. Then it works.
Now, it seems like the NOX enzyme, which I hadn't heard about since the spoke to you, seems to be central to all this stuff.
Yes, and interestingly, a paper just came out in December that said that anyone who had upregulation of NOX seemed to be more susceptible to more serious COVID. And that's kind of the path we've been going down, because the cytokine storm is interleukin-6, and also bradykinin is a piece of this as well. But we've been talking about upregulation of the NOX enzyme and IL-6 in the cytokine storm. But even if you set COVID aside, I believe many of the things that we're seeing today are related to this IL-6 being overstimulated. Again, I encourage people to listen to my 1 hour, 50-minute interview with Dr. Jill Carnahan. We go through slides. We don't make things up. We look at all the peer-reviewed studies and show how this upregulated interleukin-6 is behind so many of the conditions we're seeing today. So I'm seeing a very unique client base. You know, many times people will come to me after nothing else is working. 80% of the people I talk to have upregulated interleukin-6 by other environmental factors or genetic factors. And mold is becoming a real problem. Mold will stimulate interleukin-6. It's believed that the lipopolysaccharides in Lyme is what's stimulating the interleukin-6. Radon will stimulate it. Overexercise. And then internally, histamine, homocysteine, dopamine, sulfites all stimulate interleukin-6. So the beauty of the software is, rather than guessing, you can actually look and see, and we actually have interactive maps where the doctor can look and see where there's a genetic predisposition. And with that precision, you can say, oh, I think it's the sulfites. Oh, I think it's the dopamine. Calm those down. NOX calms down. Then you can put in your NADPH. Keep in mind, we need NADPH to recycle glutathione. So here's another example. We learn all about the benefits of glutathione, the master antioxidant. The lower it goes, the sooner you die from all causes. So we tend to think, let's take glutathione. And many times, You hear of people that say, you know, I felt good for 5 days, then I felt worse, and they don't understand why. Well, if you take glutathione in its reduced form, then it does its job through glutathione conjugation or by glutathione peroxidase to remove hydrogen peroxide. It goes into the oxidized form. And if you don't have enough NADPH to take it from oxidized to reduced, that oxidized glutathione, ironically, combines with oxygen and superoxide to make peroxynitrite, an oxidizing agent that makes you more inflamed and depletes your glutathione. So who'd have thunk taking glutathione under the wrong conditions can make you more inflamed and deplete your glutathione? Yeah. So that's why you have to make sure that the glutathione S reductase enzyme is working. Here's an interesting clinical pearl that we're just researching. Again, it's patterns that go together. I'm sure most of the doctors listening to this have heard of NRF2, nuclear transaction factor. That's controlled by KEAP1, and NRF2 controls GSR, glutathione S reductase, that takes the oxidized glutathione back to the reduced. I'm observing that people that just have been everywhere and can't get any answers, they've got mutations on KEAP1 that makes it stronger, NRF2 that makes it weaker, and mutations in glutathione S reductase. And some well-meaning person says, let me give you a cysteine, they get worse. They say, well, let me give you glutathione, they get worse, and they don't know why. So what you have to do is you have to make sure that NRF2 is strong enough. You give the cofactors to help GSR. Matter of fact, we're just formulating a product now called GSR Assist that I think is going to be incredible. It actually has things that stimulate the GSR as well as the cofactors, trying to use riboflavin to make FAD. Then when you give glutathione, it'll work. And that's the kind of personalized care I believe we need. We just can't throw glutathione at a person because they're inflamed.
Yeah, because you see these doctors and like, they give glutathione to 100 people, whatever, couple go, oh my gosh, I feel worse. Like, what? Never seen that before. And they have no idea. And just since we're on the peptide summit, just, you know, BPC, TB4, KPV, lower interleukin-6. But nitric oxide can be a double-edged sword, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Of course, if you Google nitric oxide Nobel Prize, you'll see the Nobel Prize. I can't remember if it was the late 80s or early 90s, you know, won a Nobel Prize, three scientists, for the importance of nitric oxide. We think of it as, you know, the dilator. You know, men need it for erectile function. We need it for cardiovascular. But it's also very anti-inflammatory. It actually calms down mast cells and has an anti-inflammatory role. However, I think nitric oxide has gotten somewhat of a bad rap because sometimes people look at nitric oxide as pro-inflammatory. Well, what happens is that nitric oxide will combine with superoxide to make peroxynitrite. Bob Miller opinion. Okay, just my hypothesis. That the problem is that we're making too much superoxide. And if we don't have enough superoxide dismutase to neutralize it, that superoxide combines with nitric oxide to make that dangerous peroxynitrite. One of the potential causes of that could be EMF. There are now published reports that show that EMF stimulates superoxide.
Yeah, telling you, I've done a deep dive, and the more you read about EMFs, the scarier it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, if somebody goes to Dr. Jill Carnahan's website, we just did an hour, 20-minute video on EMF, where, again, we went through the published literature. We just didn't make things up, somebody had on a blog, and the published literature is there that it stimulates free radicals and inhibits your glutathione SOD and catalase.
And it's there, but no one wants to talk about it. It's like they deny it. It's like so much in medicine is just like, you know, just suppression of information. And
Look how long it took to admit that cigarettes was a problem. You know, back in the 1940s, I mean, you can, if you want to be entertained or disgusted, go on YouTube and type in 1940s cigarette commercials where you see doctors in their white coats recommending Camel cigarettes because it's good for your throat.
Hey, I remember even in residency, like doing anesthesia, the And she always be smoking the cigarette in the OR, you know.
Yeah. Well, we didn't know. We didn't know. And there was denial for a long time because, you know, you could smoke a cigarette for 10 years and you were okay. Smoke for 20 years, lung cancer and emphysema.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid we may see the same thing with EMF. Now, the cool thing about our software is we've identified the calcium voltage channels, and we can actually identify those people that might be more prone to EMF sensitivity. We look at the what are called the CACNA1C genes that are the calcium voltage channel gates. And just as the gate implies, it pushes calcium in by voltage. And when you've got mutations, you're more prone for that EMF from outside sources to push calcium in as calmodium. That then combines with nitric oxide and superoxide to make peroxynitrite. And I've spoken to many people who've had to move out, you know, in the middle of nowhere, in a wooden log cabin and not have any EMF exposure because it makes them ill. And we've just done that. And we just did a 5-webinar series. If one of the doctors is interested, just contact us. We'll give you the links to the videos. We just did five webinars on how EMF will create Fenton reaction, interleukin-6, through the calcium voltage channels. And then more importantly, how to identify that and then what to do about it.
Where would we find those?
Well, at the end here, we'll just go to our website, functionalgenomicanalysis.com. And that's our website. And you can go inside and you'll find our contact information there. So what you may want to do is contact Yvonne Lucchesi, and I'll give you her email address, Yvonne, Yvonne, and then the letter L, at dnasupplementation.com. Yvonne L at dnasupplementation.com. And just ask her for the link for the 5 webinars, and they're free. Somebody can watch my 5 webinars on EMF.
Okay. And again, website, we're doing more EMF lectures. I just keep adding and adding to them. And we're finding, BPC helps stabilize those calcium channel, voltage-gated calcium channels. It's crazy stuff.
Sure.
And so your software is, I think, really one of the keys, and you're even upgrading it, and allows doctors to understand all this.
Absolutely. Now, this is a lot to learn. So one of the things we're doing, and I'm going to try to do a screen share here. That way we can put that email address up. I think I can do a screen share. Let's see. Let's see if it'll allow me to do that. Oops, disabled from you. So if you turn on my ability to screen share, I'll screen share the website. Yes, what we're doing is we have online certification courses for the doctors to train them. And then we also are creating software, dynamic messages in the software that will actually give doctors messages on what to do. There we go. So I will look at screen 2 here.
Yeah, and I love your figure and graph ability, which it allows you to understand all this stuff.
Sure. So here's the website, functionalgenomicanalysis.com. If you want the webinars, Yvonne L, Yvonne L, at dnasupplementation.com. And just ask her for the webinars, and we'll be glad to send them at no charge. And while we're doing a screen share here, we didn't plan on this, but why don't I just very quickly bring over, this is our inflammation map that we create.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. So here is here's the entire map, what it looks like, that maps out how you can make inflammation inside the body. And then you can zoom in. And if anyone would like this map, again, we send it to you free of charge. Just ask us for it.
Yeah.
But here's what I was talking about earlier. The NOX enzyme, NADPH, is used by the NOX enzyme to make the superoxide, hydrogen peroxide, mast cells, and histamine. But it's also needed by the NOS enzyme to make nitric oxide, thioredoxin, glutathione, put the iron from heme into ferritin. And there's this battle here, the NADPH steel. And then, as I spoke earlier, we talked about interleukin 6. I believe that many environmental factors are just overstimulating interleukin 6, which then creates a cascade of superoxide, peroxynitrite, mast cells, histamine. They all come back and stimulate IL-6 even more. They also then come down and stimulate the renin-angiotensin system and create more IL-6. And we're just on a merry-go-round of inflammation. And I think many doctors will find this fascinating, that glutamate will inhibit the ACE2 enzyme, which will allow bradykinin to go up and angiotensin to go up that stimulates interleukin 6. So this is something we need to look at.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then in the software, this is what the software looks like. Here's the pyramid. And the ones down here are the ones related to inflammation when there's mutations. But let me just quickly show you the maps. Remember, we talked earlier about nitric oxide. So what we do in the software, we allow the doctor to look at the pathway of how to make nitric oxide. Remember, we spoke about BH4. And then the software will actually even show you how many genetic mutations you have on each of these. Like you can see on this person, they've got the MTHFR 81298 that will impede their BH4 production. Or they may have mutations on their NOS enzyme. You see it coming up over to the right, how many mutations.
So the different colors are the degree, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, the blue is good. The green is a little bit better, or a little worse. Then you go orange, yellow, red. And then you can click on them to see how many mutations there are. Now, what's coming is going to be dynamic messages in here. And that's a simple one. But if someone wants to see if IL-6 might be a problem, then you can pull up this chart. And you can see in the center, you've got the IL-6, but all of the mutations that could allow that to be upregulated. So this is not for the faint of heart. This is for the person who's really serious and wants to crack the code.
Yeah, you know, it takes time, but it's not overwhelming, you know?
Exactly.
You can get it. You've made it. So people just don't go, oh, forget it, you know?
Yeah, well, it's for the person who's serious. I mean, it takes some study to do this. And this is our latest upgrade.
Anything worth it does.
Exactly. This is our latest upgrade where it shows how the potential is for Fenton reaction. So we put together the SNPs that could create the Fenton reaction, such as, you know, the hemochromatosis genes or not clearing hydrogen peroxide. And if you want to click on one of these, you will see if there's any SNPs. And this really gives the doctor a really good opportunity to add a snapshot, see if Fenton reaction might be going on. This one helps you understand the SNPs that are related to NOS uncoupling.
And now you talk about Fenton reaction a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about what that is. So, discovered in 1895 by Dr. Fenton. Let's just do a slideshow from current slide. So, inside our cells, we make energy. And as we do, sometimes an electron flies off. That combines with oxygen to make superoxide. If we have enough superoxide dismutase, we'll make hydrogen peroxide. But if we don't have enough catalase, glutathione peroxidase, thioredoxin, or NADPH to clear it, that hydrogen peroxide will combine with iron to make hydroxyl radicals that are very inflammatory. So that's the Fenton reaction. And this is what, as you mentioned, we won the award for in Helsinki, Finland in 2016.
Wow.
Those with chronic Lyme had five times more opportunity, or five times the SNPs in the Fenton, in the HFE gene that causes you to absorb extra iron. So we see this happening quite a bit in individuals, the Fenton reaction. And so if you want to just see the SNPs that are involved in that, here they are. And again, color-coded. Like for this person, they've got a lot of mutations in HMOX, which could allow them to not break down their iron properly. So that's what the software looks like.
it seems like there's a lot of ways to make hydrogen peroxide, you know, and people will use hydrogen peroxide, and it's an oxidant, and you've got like Brownstein study on COVID, hydrogen peroxide nebulized, works for, you know, to stop the cytokine storm. Can you kind of explain that?
Well, certainly. The, you know, hydrogen peroxide is one of the things that the body uses to kill pathogens. It's not all bad. But again, everything has to be in balance. So if we have genetic mutations or environmental factors that don't allow us to clear this, and we have iron absorption extra, that's when that hydrogen peroxide can go south on you. So it's wonderful at killing some things, but for some individuals, it makes them worse, or if you do too much of it, which all goes back to the balance.
It's kind of short bursts and then recovery.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because if you have too much, and if you, if we go back to my map here, let's see, where's the map? The, you know, when we have interleukin 6 being stimulated, well, it's not on here, but the mast cells will make superoxide and hydrogen peroxide for the purpose of killing pathogens. So, not bad.
They're not all bad. They're considered just, well, terrible. Mm-hmm. Now, is there anything in particular ozone does, although it, you know, generally,
well, yeah, of course. I mean, ozone, again, kills pathogen, does wonderful things. But I've spoken to many people who ozone really made them sick because that has to be turned back into hydrogen peroxide. And if you clear that, okay, great. If you don't, it can create inflammation for you.
And like high-dose vitamin C, same thing, right?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's... those are all the ways that we can get ourselves into trouble, that, you know, one person's medicine is another person's poison.
And I love it. It just makes sense, you know, and I love it. So I, so your software really combines, you know, the genetic SNPs, labs, symptoms, and kind of brings everything together.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can have the person fill out a symptom survey. Right now, we're putting in the urine organic acids from Great Plains because the SNPs is just a predisposition. Yeah. You know, we never make it, you know, you never say, oh, I've got this SNP, therefore I need to fill in the blank. I often tell doctors the SNPs are waving at you. Think about looking here. But again, I think we have to look at patterns. When you look at our software, we don't make any predictions based upon one SNP. If you overabsorb iron, if it looks as though you're not clearing hydrogen peroxide, if you're not making NADPH, that can create the Fenton reaction. So I think we've got to get away from having this SNP means this. Because you have MTHFR doesn't mean you need methylfolate. You might need to do some other things first.
It's those other SNPs. Do you have that? That's what we tell doctors. Like, you know, we do, you know, 35 labs, you know, normally is our normal intake for, you know, chronically ill. I wish we could do 50 and paint a picture, you know, and you can't hang your hat on any one test.
No, yeah. No, particularly as things get more complex.
Yeah. And I think this is just the way of the future. And let's see. So, and then you also have it. So you tell doctors what the patients need. Either they can, you know, order the supplements that they need, or you have, you know, kind of all these things ready made for these doctors.
Yeah, let's take a quick peek at that. So again, we don't have the pill for the ill. We're looking at the supplement for the function. So we'll do just another quick real screen share here. And here you will see the again, the pyramid, but what you can do, if you can go to the, you know, when you're in this, in the Fenton reaction, these, the software might give you a suggestion that we think Fenton reaction is going on. Like here's a, oh, my, sorry, here's a dynamic message. This came up specifically for that person. So I put logic in here that said, if these conditions exist, write that. So these messages will be unique. It's like having me sitting there talking to you.
And I have to say that I've done a lot of algorithms, and when you try to hear every scenario, that it is so much more difficult, and you have so many things to take into consideration. So my hat goes off to you.
Yeah, well, we're working on that. So there's a product called Hydroxyl Blocks that is designed in multiple ways to help the proper use of iron and not have the Fenton reaction going on. So what's really cool here is that, you know, we've all done this. We talk to someone and say, you know, we have a supplement here for you that we think is going to be good for you. And they look at it and they say, oh, but I can't take fill in the blank. Then what do we do? So that's why I'm so happy that I worked with a company called Personalized Nutrients, that the doctor can actually make a custom product. So say, for example, we want that Hydroxyl Blocks. You can go to Personalized Nutrients here, and it will pop up the nutrients that are in there, and then you have the ability to customize them. So logic is starting to go in here where it says catalase, and there's a little message over here. Click on it, it says, with a mutation in this one, you may want to increase the catalase. The doctor can then accept that or reject it.
So, oh, interesting. You know, yeah. I take a bunch of catalase, and I didn't correlate it with my genetic test from you. I don't know. Is there anything bad?
Oh, sure. Well, we look at the catalase genes. But here the doctor then has the ability to say, you know what, this person has a real histamine problem. I'm just going to take that out. So you just delete it out. Or if you want to add something, you can then say, you know what, I think I want to add a little fill in the blank. Say you want to put a little nicotinamide mononucleotide in it. Then it comes up and you decide, yeah, well, I'll put 20 milligrams in. So now you are making a custom supplement for that person.
Cool. That's with Pete there?
Pete Dunas and Justin Detouris at Personalized Nutrients.
I like them. We've been working with them for a long time.
Yeah. And then you just go up into the software here and you finish it up. And then the software sends it to them and it's made for the person.
Dude, you're just got it down.
So there's my test. And you can put several together and then the good folks at Personalized Nutrients will make it. So here you can see estimated dose, 4 capsules, wholesale. The doctor then gets to put in whatever they want to sell it for. And then when you're done, you save it and order it, send the order to Personalized Nutrients, but you still have the ability to mess with it. You can take the ingredients up or down. You can add things to it.
A little tip, it's usually better to get more bottles. It's going to cut down your price.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. You can combine several things together. And the nice part about the program is that if 2 supplements have the same ingredient, it will just pick the one that's the highest. It won't add them all together.
Well, they're moving up too. That's great. Mm-hmm. Great to hear.
Yeah. So that's the way that gives guidance to the physician on what to do. Like here's a product for supporting ATP, autophagy. This is for interleukin-6, supporting the DAO, the dopamine. You know, those are all the options that the doctor has to put it together. And the software gives them some guidance on, what you might want to use.
And are those listed somewhere?
If somebody goes to functionalgenomicnutrition.com, they can see all the supplements.
So they look under your name or whatever?
Well, just go functionalgenomicnutrition.com and all the supplements are there. So if they want to look at the labels, and then the software helps them decide if they should use them or not.
Nice. Let's see. Before we tell people how to kind of get hooked up with you, which I highly, highly recommend, anything else you want to mention?
You know, I think that's it, other than that we're just honored that we're having an opportunity to, hopefully be a little bit of a pioneer in helping, you know, functional doctors and those who are interested in functional medicine, how to really go under the hood, so to speak, and find answers that they may not have had before. And so if you go to the functionalgenomicanalysis.com, you can take the online certification course. You can get
I highly, highly recommend that.
Yes.
And you can try out a couple lectures, you know, no charge. And Bob, he's just great at all that, you know?
I'm a bit of a geek. I'm not Mr. Excitement.
Hey, we beg to differ.
Yeah. Well,
where are you located, by the way? Where do you live?
Well, a little town called Ephrata, Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County. I'm among the Amish and the Mennonite. In the early days, I mostly saw the Amish and the Mennonite. And then as we got interested in the genomics, we kind of went worldwide. We now talk to people all over the world. We're, for whatever reason, we're very popular in England and Australia and Canada.
Wow.
So we talked to a lot of people there.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks.
I was going to say, wow, I didn't know he was Amish.
No, I'm not Amish. No. I'm saying that that we live in Amish territory here. No, I'm English and German, but I'm in Pennsylvania Dutch country.
It takes a while to commute in your buggy.
Yeah. Yeah, they're wonderful people. They really are. They really are.
No, it sounds good. So how the heck I'm watching this? How the heck do I get started with you?
Well, I would encourage people go to functionalgenomicanalysis.com and just give a certification that you're a practicing health professional. This is not for the public. So if the public is watching this, sorry, we don't work with you on that. This is only for health professionals.
Yeah.
And sign up for the online certification. It's free. You can take several modules and see if it's for you. And again, it's not for everybody. If somebody's looking for a report that says, I want a 2-page report that tells me what to do, this isn't it. This is for the serious practitioner who really wants to dig in, wants to, take the online courses, think about this a little bit. And what I offer, I can't do it for every client, but if someone's new, we'll do a 1-hour consult either with the doctor or with the doctor and the patient until the doctor's up to speed and knows what knows what to do.
Hey, I'm calling dibs on you no matter what. Because, yeah, we find you just come up with, so many unique things and just knowing it so well off the back of your hand. Mm-hmm. I think it's just been a great addition to our practice and number of doctors like Dr. Hunt in our office has just embraced it. And I think you're just doing a great service and you're so dedicated and still a nice guy.
Well, thank you. And Dr. Hunt is a pleasure to work with. She really is. I always tell everybody.
I better edit that out. No, she's awesome. I don't know where I'd be without her.
Absolutely.
So we use it in the practice. We're going to actually put together a program for peptides where we look at your genomics that will offer a special discount along with this peptide summit. And of course, we're going to use Bob and we're going to hassle him to be on all the calls.
Okay, we'll do it.
He has nothing else to do. And exactly. And hey, Bob, as always, it's a pleasure. I just learn so much every time I talk with you. And I just appreciate everything you're doing.
Well, it's my honor, and we want to be of service to humanity. That's our major goal. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time. Appreciate it. And I'm sure the docs are going to get a lot of out of this. And again, highly recommend that this is something you add to your armamentarium of another major tool for treating your patients.
Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure.